Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Ben Matlin is 55 years old, married with children, a cat, and a turtle. Pretty standard stuff, but with a twist. Matlin has never been able to walk or even stand. He was born with a neuromuscular condition called type 2 spinal muscular atrophy. The disorder is rare and incurable. Because of it, Matlin's in a wheelchair. The disease didn't stop him, though, from graduating from Harvard and forging a career in journalism and writing books about life with a neurodegenerative disease. His newest is a revealing exploration of 15 couples who fall in love, interabled couples, as he calls them, where only one partner has a disability. The book is called In Sickness and in Health: Love, Disability, and a Quest to Understand the Perils and Pleasures of Interabled Romance. Ben Matlin joins us now. Welcome.
Hello.
The book delves into the stories of 15 couples, their relationships, and disabilities. Start off by telling us, though, a little bit about yourself and what having spinal muscular atrophy has meant for you.
Well, I mean, it's something I was born with, so it's sort of original equipment. But I've been fortunate. I've had a pretty good, normal life, so I always expected that normal things would happen, including love and marriage and having children.
And it did. You've got two kids now, right?
Yes.
You've been married for how many years?
About 30.
And Mary Lois, your wife, was also your first girlfriend, right?
That's true.
So you describe your first date in the book. You were 19 years old. You said that you made Mary Lois walk 30 blocks in Manhattan because taxicabs back then were not wheelchair accessible. I wonder if that was like a crash course in what it's like to date Ben Matlin.
Perhaps. I mean, I lived up on the 82nd Street, and the concert we were going to was wherever it was in the 50s. But there was no other choice, no other way to get there in those days. This is in the 1980s, before the Americans with Disabilities Act, before the buses or anything was really accessible. You know, I tried to make light of it, and because that was the only option available.
You wondered in your head at that point what was going on in her head, and you interviewed her for the book. What did she tell you about that?
She was thinking more about me. When I suggested she ride on my lap, she recalls thinking, I can't do that because it might hurt you. You look delicate. And I had to reassure her, it's fine, you can do it. Don't worry.
And I think that's one of the things that made her, according to your book anyway, fall in love with you. Before we get into some of the other stories, I wonder, when you were coming of age, when you were a college student, did you ever consider the fact that your condition, the fact that you can't move your hands too much, right? And you can't move your body at all. Is that correct?
That's true, yes.
Yeah. Did it make you wonder if love would ever happen or be complicated? I know you said this became normal for you, so you expected things to happen. Did it ever concern you that it might be unattainable in this world?
Honestly, no. I was cocky. I was overconfident, perhaps naive. Although looking back now at my age, I kind of wonder about that. For the reason I wrote the book. And so I kind of wanted to examine how it happened, why it's lasted so long, and instead of just looking at me, at us, that's why I brought in other couples to get a sense of how things are these days.
So among the people that you spoke with are couples where one person in the couple has multiple sclerosis, somebody with brittle bone syndrome, somebody else who's paralyzed. One of those people who's paralyzed is Rachel Friedman, who, as a bride-to-be, was paralyzed after someone pushed her into a pool at her bachelorette party just a couple of days before her wedding. She ended up getting married to that same man. But how did that experience redefine her relationship?
Well, she says that they are still so well matched that it really didn't matter. And I kind of questioned that. You had to kind of redefine yourselves, right? Because they manage, you know, they have a child. That was her kind of big struggle when I spoke to her was things like, you know, changing diapers and being a mom with limited use of her hands. But she did tell me an interesting story that I could sort of relate to.
Yeah.
The people sometimes tell her husband what a hero he is for being with her. And that makes her angry because he's not doing me some favor. You know, it's not that he's missing out on something because of my disability. And she really felt that wasn't fair, and I could understand that completely.
You can understand it because you're right that people say that about your wife, Mary Lois, as well, that, you know, she's a saint and you're lucky to have found love.
That kind of view is based on an assumption, a prejudice, that the disabled person is a deficit, and that's not really fair. I mean, we are so much more than our physical limitations. Yes, there are situations, of course, where it doesn't work out, but my disability was part of what's made me who I am, so to separate it out really makes no sense.
You know, we all come with our stuff. You know, we all come with our baggage in any way. Do you feel as though you're able to give as much as you get? Because I know that Mary Lois offers you a lot of help in many ways. You write about that in the book. Do you feel, especially as you age together, that you can give back?
Well, I make a point of it. I make sure I do. I mean, one thing I do, I think, in our relationship, I tend to be the connection with the outside world. I mean, I keep track of family birthdays. I keep in touch with, cousins and distant relatives. And the finances, I pay all the bills and take care of the taxes. And I've tended to often to set the agenda, I think, you know, what's on TV tonight or what movie should we go see, that kind of thing. So there's emotional support that I give her and a sense of humor. And every weekend we do the crossword puzzle together. and we are a team. We are a partnership.
And what about parenthood? How has that changed your relationship?
Well, like any couple, I guess. Kids are time-consuming and expensive. And of course, bring a tremendous, not just joy, but, a sense of purpose. There were rough times when they were small, when they were babies, and my wife had to do more of the physical stuff. But I made sure I contributed. I found ways to play with them, to watch them in the tub, tell them stories, sing them songs. I learned how to change a diaper, even though I couldn't do it physically. I could direct someone to do it for me if need be.
That's not nothing.
Well, I tried, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be passive or be lazy about it. I wanted to be an equal contributor or participant, and I believe I have been.
Ben, I want to ask you about one of the women that you interviewed. She has spina bifida. Her name is Doreen. She remembered that her mother once told her that she would never find a husband because, quote, sex wasn't even in the cards. How does sex factor into these relationships?
Certainly there are some people who grew up with their disabilities whose parents, yes, told them, you know, you're not going to ever find love. You're going to be with mom and dad forever. Maybe the parents mean well to protect the kids from disappointment, but it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. What was kind of neat for me to learn is that, you know, nowadays young people, it's all online. So even Shane in my book, who's 23, I think, when I first spoke to him, he blogged and he was able to be honest about his limitations, but also get his personality, I guess, out there online. Obviously, some people care more about sex than others, or there are degrees of intimacy that people can enjoy. But it's important, really, actually, to stress that these couples are lovers. They are physical with each other, intimate in certain ways. But that's part of the problem we talked about before, calling one a saint or whatever. It tends to desexualize or infantilize the disabled person. And that's really not fair or accurate.
What would you tell people who are listening right now who might be disabled and looking for love, or people who are able-bodied and considering life with someone who is disabled? What would you say?
I guess I would say don't give up hope. It may not be easy, but one thing my book, I hope, shows, and it's a testament to the fact that it is possible for a variety of situations, types of disabilities. It does happen. People do find love, and they do make it work.
Thank you. Really nice to speak with you. Ben Madlin, author of In Sickness and in Health, Love, Disability, and a Quest to Understand the Perils and Pleasures of Interabled Romance. Nice to speak with you.
My pleasure. Thank you.